Good evening, folks. This is your host, Franz Weinschenk, thanking you for tuning into Valley Writers Read, where only the residents of our great valley get to read their stories. And tonight, a really touching story that, in my opinion, all of us need to hear. It's about a returning veteran. The author is Fresnan Gabriella Case, and she entitles her story, The Long Way Home. And so here she is, Gabriella Case, reading The Long Way Home.
The Long Way Home. He slammed the front door on his way out, hard enough to make the glass inset rattle. He brushed past the bush marigold, releasing its spicy lemon scent. Cowboy looked at him with a doggy grin, tail wagging his whole back end.
Stay.
The last thing he needed was anyone tagging along, someone else to be responsible for, even if it was Cowboy, his sidekick for many years. Cowboy whined.
Stay. Good boy.
He glanced back at the dog from the front gate, noticed the shabby plaster statue of La Virgen set against the peeling turquoise paint of the house behind, the clumps of prickly pear not yet blooming. He had so much wanted to be home last year when he sweated in Kandahar province, promising La Virgen to be a more dutiful son, to get along better with Sophia, his older sister, if he made it back home. Things hadn't turned out the way he expected. He missed his buddies, couldn't find work. Nightmares kept him awake at night, so he slept in late. He didn't have anything in common with the friends he had left behind. They talked about girlfriends, sports, parties, things that didn't matter to him anymore. And Mom had been on his case about his drinking. That's what the outreach counselor was about today. We have different groups for our returning vets to help them readjust to life at home, deal with their post-traumatic stress, with problems like drinking. The guy looked like he wouldn't be able to tell a rifle from a pistol. He did seem to get that Raymond didn't want to talk, that this visit was his mom's idea. He didn't stay long. Check us out sometime when you're in the area. We can introduce you to some of the other guys. Call me any time if you have questions. Thanks for your trouble. As soon as the door closed behind him, Raymond rounded on his mother. How could you go behind my back like that? You don't want to listen to me when I say you have a problem. You sleep all day, stay out all night. You're rude to everyone, and I can't talk to you. What was I supposed to do? It went on a bit, eventually ending with college, her favorite pet peeve. I can't concentrate, Ma. I can't sleep. I can't think. It would be a waste of time and money. Just back off. He shook with anger, aware with a small part of his mind that he was that close to saying something unforgivable. You were such a good student. I'm disappointed in you. You've turned into a bum. With an incoherent shout, he turned, pushed a chair out of the way, barely noticed it toppling backwards. Shame and rage propelled him out the door. He kicked pebbles on the sidewalk, his anger at a rolling boil. It happened so easily these days. He couldn't remember the last time he felt calm. Only drinking helped. By the time he reached the church of La Virgen Sagrada, his breathing had slowed down. Even though he didn't go to church anymore, he tried to walk past whenever he went anywhere in town. An old habit. He loved the warm sandstone finish, the pyramid shape on the roof above the entrance holding up the bell tower, the white steps leading up to a tall wooden door. When he was an altar boy, he had fallen in love with the statue of La Virgen, with the blue-green mantle covering her head and falling over the folds of a red gown. She had dark hair like Ama, and there were tiny gold stars painted on the mantle. Father Anselmo said she was a copy of La Virgen de Guadalupe. She had been a steady presence in his mind since he received First Communion. He had dropped the waver and felt horribly embarrassed. But Father Anselmo just gave him another one. And she said, what matters, it's what's in your heart. At first, he thought that was what communion was all about, talking with La Virgen. It took him a while to realize that not everyone could hear her, at least not the way he did. Father Anselmo said it was okay. Most people didn't, but a few, like the saints, did. He hadn't heard her voice since that day in Afghanistan. He had stopped talking to her. There was no point. When he got to the pub, he waited inside the door to let his eyes adjust after the glare outside. He saw Eric behind the bar with its Lit Dos Equis sign, surrounded by a string of plastic red peppers, a couple of old-timers in one corner. He slipped onto a stool facing Eric. "The usual?" He nodded. Here, he didn't have to use words. There were no expectations. It didn't matter that he had lost his way. Briefly outlined against the warm light of the setting sun, the dog slipped in with the latest batch of regulars and made his way to Raymond's spot at the bar.
"Your dog has come to fetch you home for supper."
Laughter erupted from behind him at the table where Carlos held court. He and Carlos went back a ways, from the time Carlos pushed him whenever he saw him in the corridors of Cesar Chavez Elementary, till they finally had that big fight in high school. It had been an uneasy truce since then.
"Better go home before Mama sends in the troops," the speaker chuckled at his own joke. "Oh no, he is the troops."
This time, the laughter lasted a while. Raymond gritted his teeth, glad the poor lighting hit his blush. He'd love to punch the guy in the face. Just breathe. He's nothing but an ignorant bastard. It was time to go before he lost it. He laid a $10 bill on the counter and slipped off the stool, snapping his fingers for cowboy. The last of the setting sun put a bright red wash across the top of the Sangro de Cristo mountains. In Afghanistan, the mountains reminded him of home. Now, the Sangres reminded him of Afghanistan. The damn war had gotten into him and followed him back. He had no idea what to do about it. Maybe he would go up to Cottonwood Creek and camp, remind himself why he loved it here. He walked briskly along San Pablo Avenue, the church down the block on his left. Cowboy ran ahead. When he got to the church, he sniffed at something near the door, barked once sharply, then looked back at Raymond.
"I'm coming, you fool dog," he muttered.
He climbed the steps to the entrance, a sound from the bundle on the ground, mostly in shadow. What was it? He bent down, barely making out a dingy blanket fashioned into a nest. He pulled the top back, noticed the gleam of bright eyes, sat back on his heels in astonishment. A baby! Someone had left a baby! He carefully picked up the bundle, cradling it in the crook of his right arm the way he had his nieces when they were tiny. When he looked down at the wrinkled face of a newborn with a shock of black hair, a tiny face reminding him of another child with dark hair and dark eyes, he saw a smile. He thought they couldn't that young, but this one looked straight at him and smiled. He noticed a smile tugging at the corners of his mouth in return. "Hi, little guy." He felt a fierce need to protect him. "What to do?" Cowboy looked up at him and barked as if in answer. "Home to Ama? She was a foster parent. She'd know who to call." The earlier argument didn't enter his mind. Instead, a sense of urgency took hold of him. He glanced up at the statue of La Virgen as he left. "Don't think I'm letting you off that easy," he addressed her. But she probably knew his heart wasn't in it, if she was listening. "Don't believe for one little second that you can live in my house and eat my food and treat me the way you did this afternoon. I've half a mind to." Raymond thrust the bundled baby at his mother, who had started hollering at him from the kitchen as soon as he came in the door. "Dios mío!" She pulled back in surprise, looked up at him. "You didn't?" "No, Ma, he isn't mine." Cowboy found him on the steps of the church. He pushed the baby into her arms. She took him, still looking at her son. Then she nodded, coming to some conclusion. "Bueno, you do have some sense left." She looked down at the baby. "Who would leave a child like this? Poor little thing." She shook her head and sighed. "We'll have to call child protection."
And then she did that thing he had seen her do 100 times. She lifted her head, squared her shoulders, and took charge. "You'll have to stop by Sophia's for baby bottles. I know she kept some. Ask if she has diapers and some clothes. Then go to the store for formula, and if you need, diapers." She turned away from him, already attending to the next task. "Where will we put you?" she muttered to the baby. She looked back at her son across her shoulder. "My purse is on the dresser." With the dinner dishes cleared away, Raymond sat across from his mother at the kitchen table, a Corona leaving damp rings on the vinyl tablecloth. After drinking a bottle of formula, the baby had gone to sleep without a fuss. He smiled, remembering how it had felt to hold him. "So what did the social worker say?" "She'll be looking for a foster family to place the baby until they can figure out if he has family who might want to take him. I told her to leave him for tonight." "Ma, you know what those places are like. They just take them for the money." Raymond didn't know why the idea of the baby leaving bothered him, but it did. "How can you say that, Ramon? When I took care of foster kids, they had a good home, and I can't take care of him. I've got to be back at work tomorrow morning." "I can take care of him," Raymond blurted out. "You?" His mother looked at the beer bottle, eyebrows raised. "I know, Ma. I've been drinking too much." He was interrupted by her snort. "I can stop. If I take care of the baby, I'll have to." She looked at him for a long moment. He couldn't tell what she was thinking. "We can try to keep him if you go to those groups the counselor was talking about." "What?" "That's my final answer. Take it or leave it. If we take him, I don't want to see you fail. That baby deserves better. You need help to deal with your drinking. You go to the vet center, and I'll see if the social worker will place him with us." For a moment, Raymond could feel the fear behind his anger. He did not want to walk back into those memories. He'd been trying his damnedest to shut them off. "Ma, I can't." He felt embarrassed at the quaver in his voice. "Don't you know that I can see how hard this has been for you?" Her voice softened for a moment. "I wouldn't ask it if I saw any other way." The steel crept back in. "If you want the baby, you do as I ask." She had him. He couldn't see any way out. He wanted to make a home for that baby. For just a moment, he remembered. When they drove up to the village to clear it of any remaining Taliban, they saw a little boy, no more than 2, in front of the first house. He sat crying beside the body of his dead mother, pulling on her blood-soaked clothes. His dark eyes accused Raymond with uncomprehending hurt. He still saw him in his dreams, smelt the mother's charred flesh, the dust rising from a collapsed building. The dead that day, 7 villagers, women, children, an old man, had been collateral damage. They saw a lot of that. "Okay," he heard himself say, unaware that he had made a decision until that moment. "I'll go tomorrow afternoon, after you get back from work." "Good. I'll call the social worker right now." She headed for the phone in the living room. He took another long swallow from the bottle, shook his head to cover the trembling inside. What the hell had he signed up for? The dark-haired young woman who had introduced herself as Esperanza walked him from the main building to a smaller one, also adobe pink, across a courtyard planted with saguaro, prickly pears, and other native plants. She had the high, white cheekbones of a Navajo. Raymond flinched when a pinyon jay screeched as he flew to a low branch on a tree next to the walkway. Embarrassed, he glanced at Esperanza, who walked as if she hadn't noticed. It happened 12 times a day. Any loud noise or unexpected movement made him jump. He hated it. But no matter how many times he told himself to quit acting like a baby, he still reacted. When they entered the building, Esperanza headed straight for an office in the back. They passed a waiting area with mismatched chairs and worn-looking copies of Field and Stream and Motor Trend. He followed her into a room where a tall, bulky guy with a gray buzz cut and tired eyes walked around his desk to greet them. "I've got a new guy for your group, Don," Esperanza introduced him. "Raymond Laredo, Don Powell."
The men shook hands. She left after a last glance at him. She sure didn't say much. Raymond couldn't decide whether that bothered him. It was different from the girls he knew. They sat down. Raymond perched on the edge of his seat, aware of the door, now closed, next to his chair, the clock on the wall behind the desk, muted sounds of conversation from the next room. "So, you want to jump right into group?" The counselor studied him, curious. "It's not that I want to, but I need to," Raymond told him about the nightmares, the drinking, the baby, his mom's ultimatum. "That's a new one for me," Don chuckled. "Don't feel too badly. It's usually a family member who insists the vet get help. We guys have a hard time talking about what troubles us. It took me years after Nam to finally ask for help." Raymond felt his body settle back in the chair a fraction. Maybe this guy could understand him. He had been there. Don asked detailed questions about the nightmares, his sleeping, the drinking, his relationships at home and with friends. Raymond could hear how much his life had changed, how much everything wasn't normal. "I'm a freak," he thought. Sometime later, Don put aside the pad he had been making notes on. "I'm concerned about the drinking. If you keep that up, the group isn't going to help much." Did everyone want to run his life? How was he going to cope without booze, relax so he could go to sleep? An image of the baby peacefully sleeping in the crib in his room popped into his mind. He would have to be able to wake up at night to feed him. "I'll try to cut back," he said, already dreading the night ahead. "Well, it's your call. If I see you can't do it, I'll recommend AA or outpatient rehab. The group right now has 9 guys in it, all of them returning vets from Iraq and Afghanistan. Some have been in it for a few years, some for a few weeks. Let me introduce you to them. It's just about time for group to start." As they walked back down the corridor, Raymond noticed how his head wanted to pull in between his shoulder blades. His hands felt damp. He took a deep breath, straightened his spine. Like them, he was a soldier who had served his country. He would take his medicine like a man. The knot in his stomach wasn't convinced. But a small circle of warmth radiated from the medallion of La Virgen, where it once again nestled, hidden underneath his shirt. The air was balmy outside the house when he opened the gate. He could see the kitchen light through the darkened living room. He thought of going straight to his room and checking on the baby. "Ray, is that you?" his mother called from the kitchen. Damn, she would want to know how it went. Reluctantly, he changed directions. In the kitchen, he headed to the fridge to get a beer. He could sure use one. He still felt hyper from the group. He paused as he reached for a bottle. He had told Don he'd try to cut back, not stop. But if he was going to prove he didn't have a real problem. He closed the refrigerator door. "You got some of that manzanilla tea?" "In the cupboard. There's hot water on the stove." Ma didn't even blink an eye. When he was little and couldn't sleep, that's what she made for him. It helped him calm down. "How's the baby?" He wanted to know, but he also wanted to buy some time. "He's such a happy, good little boy. Hardly cried at all. He reminds me of you when you were a baby." She watched him pour water over the tea bag. Ray hadn't heard her say anything nice about him in so long. He was strangely pleased. At first, everyone said he was a hero. While he liked the way that sounded, he knew it wasn't true. He just did what he had to and tried to survive. And some of the things he had done. But after a while, everyone, especially his mom, just wanted him to be normal. Go to work, go to college, get a girlfriend. And he couldn't. Had no idea how he'd ever get back to normal. "I signed the forms," she continued. "We're officially foster parents. The social worker suggested you go to some of their trainings if you're going to take care of him too." She paused. "You do understand that he'll go to family as soon as they figure out who he belongs to and find someone to take him." He shrugged. "So? I just don't want you to get hurt when he leaves. You let me worry about that." And then she did ask about the vet center. "The counselor's okay. He's a Vietnam vet, an older guy.
The guys in the group I don't know about yet. They seem all right. One of them was posted not too far from where I was stationed. Raymond talked gingerly around the knot in his stomach, which had formed again at the thought of one of the stories about someone's friend being killed in an ambush. He drank his tea and tried hard not to think about the beers left in the fridge. "One day at a time," Don had said. "So, Raymond," Don turned to him, "you ready to tell your story?" Despite having planned to do just that, Raymond froze. It had been 6 weeks. He'd gone from rookie group member to one of the guys, had learned to limit his drinking to social events, got a decent night's sleep half the time because the nightmares only came once in a while, could quiet himself instead of yelling or getting into arguments. When he talked to Esperanza, her calmness rubbed off on him just a little. He swallowed, nodded, palms sweaty. "You know what to do." Don's look was sending him a message. For a second, his mind went blank. But then it clicked. He took a deep breath, and another. He'd been doing a lot of that. It helped. The plan was to leave base at O'Dark 100. There'd been information about a friendly village being taken over by Taliban. We were supposed to clear it. We waited in full battle rattle for the Terp, who had to finish his prayers or something, but finally got outside the wire just as the sun came up. I was driving the first truck of a convoy of four. As he told the story, he again saw the road stretch in front of them, the sun casting long shadows before them, the mountains reaching taller than the Sangres to their right. They crept along at a slow pace despite the late start. When the tire blew on Stan's truck, Sarge told him and his guys to catch up as soon as they were done changing it. The three remaining trucks rattled into the hills away from the dusty plain, which was already starting to heat up. As they rounded a curve, Raymond saw a silhouette backlit by the sun about half the length of a football field away on the side of the road. He slammed on the brakes. He tried to make sense of Sarge's, "Why the hell did you stop?" while deciphering the meaning of the shape ahead. He recognized it as La Virgen, her hand raised in the universal gesture for halt. "There's someone ahead telling us to stop," he tried to explain. "Don't give me that crap. There's no one there." Another look at Raymond's face had Sarge shaking his head. "Don't tell me it's another one of your visions, Santos." "I can't do that, sir. I can see her plain as day. She wants us to stop." There had been a couple of similar incidents, giving Raymond his nickname, Santos. Both times, he and his buddies had narrowly avoided getting injured. After that, word had gotten around on base. Most people thought of him as lucky, if slightly touched in the head. "Ah, crap!" Sarge clearly wasn't happy with this newest development. "If this turns out to be nothing, you'll be seeing the shrink." He sent Dutch and Mouse to check the road ahead. While the tension built as they watched the men, they could hear a rumble on the road farther back. Stan catching up. Sarge tried to raise him by radio. No luck. Stan came roaring up from behind them. Raymond could see his wide grin as he passed. Sarge waved for him to stop. When Stan saw Dutch and Mouse, he pulled hard towards the left side of the road. The blast created billows of smoke and dirt. One of the wheels blew overhead. The truck slowly settled on its side. Everything stopped but for the sound of falling debris, moans from one of the men. "I don't remember getting out of the truck or running up to Stan's. He hung in his seat, blood running out of one ear and from a cut over his eye." He was gone. With those words, Raymond looked up, aware suddenly of wetness on his cheeks. Don's eyes held so much compassion he couldn't look at him or he'd start bawling. The other guys sat still in their seats, Siggy's eyes suspiciously shiny, TJ shaking his head. "She didn't protect him. He took the blast meant for me." Raymond's voice cracked on those words. "The Virgin Mary, you mean?" Don clarified. He nodded. Someone handed him a box of Kleenex. He blew his nose. He pulled the medallion from under his T-shirt. "I stopped carrying this afterwards." He looked down at it. "I couldn't talk to her anymore. What was the point of saving me if a friend died in my place?
Raymond lay on his side on the living room floor, rolling a blue ball towards the baby, watching him trying to grab it.
Your hands just aren't big enough yet, Chico. It'll be a while before you play baseball.
Chico reached for him, toppled over, and started giggling. Raymond laughed. His mother walked into the house. He scooped up the baby and followed her into the kitchen.
It's starting to get hot, she complained as she poured a glass of iced tea. That tightwad Romeo is waiting for customers to complain before he turns the cooler on.
Hey, Ma, I signed up for classes at the community college.
Pleasure heated Raymond's cheeks at his mother's look of surprise.
You finally came to your senses.
Then she looked down, bit her lip, worried about something.
I might as well tell you now.
He swallowed through a tight throat. That didn't sound good.
Miss Carter told me they found the baby's family. They will pick him up this weekend. They would have come today, she continued, but I told her we need time to get used to the idea.
You could have asked for more, Raymond burst out.
I did. That's all we got. They'll be here Sunday.
Raymond wanted to yell. It wasn't fair. He loved the little guy. All the air went out of him. He had known it could happen, even as he hoped it wouldn't. They'd had him for 3 months.
Do you know anything about them? He finally asked.
They are the grandparents, Navajo, Mr. and Mrs. Yazzie.
Navajo treated children well, he thought. When a baby first laughed, they held a ceremony. He remembered Chico's smile the day he found him. Tears pricked his eyes. As a child, he had been resentful about his mom's sadness when one of the foster kids left. He liked it so much better when he had her all to himself. He noticed the baby's fussing, realized he held him too tightly. He sat down, started bouncing him on his lap, made an effort to smile through his sadness at the baby's renewed happiness. I'm going to miss you. Raymond huffed up the trail the last few feet, stopped at the overlook, and stretched. Mesquite Lookout was one of his favorite spots, giving him a wide view of the desert. A large shadow, cast by a cloud far above, covered the whole town below. Up here, he couldn't even hear traffic. Only the wind through the few scraggly pines and mesquite. He sat down cross-legged on the large flat sandstone, pulled his camouflage canteen off his belt and took a long swallow. He thought back over the last few hours. After the Yazzies came to pick Chico up, Raymond went on automatic. Mrs. Yazzie got all teary-eyed when she held her grandson for the first time. He, being the charmer he was, gave her a big smile. Despite his best intentions, Raymond got jealous. Mr. Yazzie carried Chico's clothes and bottles to a beat-up green truck. With Raymond's help, he loaded the crib and swing. There was no point holding on to these things. When it came time to say goodbye, he reached through the truck window and tousled Chico's hair. Bye, buddy. Be good. He quickly stepped back. Chico only glanced at him, busy trying to chew on his stuffed rabbit. Right before getting into the truck, Mr. Yazzie turned to Raymond. I can tell you've taken good care of our boy. We want you to come see him when he's settled in. You are now part of his life and our family. And then the truck took off down the road with Chico inside. On his perch high above town, Raymond let the tears come. Heard Dawn's voice in his head. There ain't no shame in crying. He cried for the loss of Chico, whose first smile had hooked him. Cried for the little Afghan boy beside his dead mother. For all he had lost by going to war. After a while, he blew his nose on a red bandana and took another drink of water. He let himself think into the future, which, despite his sadness over Chico's leaving, seemed full of possibilities. He was going to become a teacher and work with kids. He would take Mr. Yazzie up on the offer of visiting. Maybe he would look for a girlfriend like Esperanza. The medallion on his chest radiated warmth. He heard La Virgen, clear as the cawing of the raven atop the pine tree. Welcome home.
Said, hey, it's good to be back home. again.
That was Gabriella Case reading her story, The Long Way Home. Of course, we immediately realize that this is a very current, realistic story about a returning veteran, Raymond, the lead character in the story, who's just back from Afghanistan. He suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder and seems seriously debilitated. He drinks a lot, quarrels with his mother all the time, and almost daily revisits many of his war experiences in his mind. As time goes by, he seems to be getting worse and into a psychological mess. Then one day, right outside of his church, he finds a baby that somebody left in a bundle of blankets. He immediately falls in love with that baby, takes care of it, and in the process reaches out to Veterans Organization to help him with all of his problems. He even quits drinking and, probably best of all, makes up with his mom. They give the baby to its grandparents, so the story has a good ending all around. In her story tonight, Gabriella Case carefully and realistically describes the mindset, pitfalls, and problems of returning veterans. Her story gives us a clear understanding of what post-traumatic stress syndrome is all about, and the hardships and difficulties faced by those returning veterans and their families who are affected by it. Of course, we thank them for their service, but I believe by telling such a true-to-life story and by so carefully analyzing and describing the lead character, our author helps us all to understand and hopefully aid and assist our returning veterans. It's for that reason that we're grateful to Gabriella Case for her fine story. And so we come to the end of another edition of Valley Writers Read. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to listen to tonight's or any other Valley Writers Read story again, just go online at kvpr.org and click on to Valley Writers Read. Next week, two authors, Deb Borofka and Janice Stevens. In the meantime, this is your host, Franz Weinschenk, wishing you and yours a great life story until we meet again. Good night.
Valley Writers Read is a production of Valley Public Radio, produced by Don Weaver and Franz Weinschenk. Please join us again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Valley Writers Read.